Bonk.
What's up?
Welcome to the podcast zone, the Bazone.
How are you?
I'm doing great. This podcast that we're doing, it's called Panning the Stream.
It is. That's the name of it.
Yeah, we watch stuff and we talk about it. But yeah, how are things going? This is the, second/third episode we've recorded from within the confines of the Pizone.
Indeed.
Yes, yes. Got some great feedback from folks on the Patreon letting us know that it sounds pretty good in here.
Yeah, well, it is the zone.
It is the Pizone. We are in an enclosed space with a tiny little table and two mics, and it's cozy in here.
Dedicated little podcast room.
It is a room for podcasting, and also I've got my big box of Amiibos directly above us, precariously kind of. It's kind of hanging over the edge.
Oh, yeah. So, it doesn't look too stable.
Death by Amiibo is possible. There are like 100
Let's
plus.
Let's promise if it ever falls on us, we're going to keep that into the recording.
Oh, 1,000%, yes.
That would be pretty funny.
It's too bad Amiibos don't make sounds, like when they would fall or motion.
Would make a sound, but they wouldn't make like
a special one, like an electronic sound or anything. You, when we were moving here to lovely Stamford, Connecticut, you individually wrapped every one of my Amiibos in bubble wrap.
Well, I mean, that sounds like it was a nice thing to do, but it was at the behest of you. You insisted that they each be individually wrapped.
Well, because that's how I did it. And when I moved to New York, I individually wrapped every one of them. Many have been added since that time. Mm-hmm. And so I was planning on doing it, and you graciously offered. And you asked how I wrapped it, and I said, well, yes, I wrap every one of them individually in a piece of bubble wrap.
And as I was doing it, it was like the pile was never getting smaller. I would do it for 15 minutes, and the pile would remain the same size.
They multiply like rabbits.
You have so many of them.
It's a lot, and they're hard to wrap because a lot of them, especially all those goddamn Fire Emblem characters, they all have swords that they're like sticking out, and it's not like, what are the easiest ones? You got like a Bowser Jr. who's kind of a rotund,
Luigi is like stiff straight. He looks like he's ready to be rolled up.
Yeah, like he's trying to help you out.
Yeah, he's doing me a favor. He was the easiest
The
one.
Smash Brothers Luigi, yes.
The Smash Brothers one, there was little...
The Kirby.
Kirby was very easy.
Kirby's round.
Small.
Yeah.
One of the more difficult ones was like the Guardian from Breath of the Wild, because that had all those appendages and stuff.
Yes, that's a tricky one. Mm-hmm. The Monster Hunter ones are like two parts.
They have big wings. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's some that's definitely more cumbersome than others. They don't have like a standard size, the Amiibos.
No, they're kind of all over the place. Mm-hmm. The base is typically about the same.
The base is the same, except for the yarn ones, of course.
Of course. I will say that we are at the point now, a couple weeks into living in Stamford, that things are the way we want them, mostly.
For the most part. There's some decorative stuff we have to do.
Yes, decorative stuff, but in terms of just function, we've got your TV in the living room.
Oh, mama, do we ever.
That's a good one. Actually, that's what we watched. By the way, we'll get to it in a second, but we watched Hell or High Water on Netflix, and we'll talk about it at length in a second, but let's keep chatting about moving to Stamford. Everything's kind of set up the way we want it. The thing that is the most, like, the biggest question mark for me right now is what the hell to do with the Amiibos.
Mm-hmm. Well, I suggest getting a floating shelf. If anyone has a good recommendation for this Amiibo problem, feel free to let us know. But I'm thinking, like, a shallow floating shelf. The issue is just the sheer quantity.
That's the problem.
You'd need a shelf that would, like, wrap around the whole room.
Or, like, tiered, like, lots of different, like five shelves. But I don't want them to go above eye level, because I want to be able to see them.
Yeah, that's an issue, too. And the thing is, it's like, your room, the game room that you have set up is perfect size for a game room.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think there's enough size to accommodate, like, a full shelving unit specifically for the Amiibos.
No, especially because I have a lamp on the way that's going to go in the corner. Don't really have space for, like, a curio cabinet. It's a pretty small room. It's perfect for, like, my little theater. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to play Call of Duty all night in this room. It's perfect. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, the Amiibos, they're just sitting in that box right now above our heads.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know what, big problems here in Connecticut.
Well, maybe as time goes on, we'll realize that we don't have to see tiny figurines of our favorite video game characters every day. Our lives will be just as good as they are.
Yeah,
we'll
I'm pretty happy.
The worse for wear.
I'm very happy with the situation here. We have a car now.
Yeah, I don't wake up in the morning and think everything's perfect, but I can't see the Waluigi Amiibo.
Well, you don't wake up in the morning thinking that because you're up all night in a fevered sweat thinking about the Amiibos. You can't get up if you don't fall asleep. But no, this whole place is great. Waking up screaming, yes. But yeah, I think we're in a good spot here.
We are in a good spot.
Having a car is very nice.
Having a car. Dan has his own bathroom, which is great.
Oh, yeah.
He has all his... I have to clean up these weird little hairs that look like pubic hairs, but are actually just your chest hairs, which
chest
are
hairs,
so abundant.
There's abundant chest hair, especially when we were living in New York near the end. I had the big old beard going on. So that stuff,
just wiry, small hairs that I don't have to deal with anymore because it's all confined to your bathroom.
You have a nice lady bathroom. You have the bigger bathroom. Mm-hmm. You can put all your stuff in there. Mm-hmm. I have very few things in terms of like product type things. Right. I got a bar of soap. I got my shampoo. And that's pretty much the extent of it.
Yeah. Well, I have a ton of shit, but I keep it under wraps. Like, you'd have to go into my drawers to see it because I'm like trying to keep it nice and not leave stuff out on the counter and everything.
Well, I found that since you have that space where you can do that, like, I never thought about getting extra stuff in the bathroom. But now that I have this freedom, I'm like, I'm going to buy my own bottle of Listerine. So I went on Amazon and bought a big purple bottle of Listerine.
I saw that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a lot. That's a hefty amount of Listerine.
Yeah, we're living large here now.
We are.
This is great. Here in Connecticut, we have the space to live large.
We have the space to get a really big thing of Listerine.
We do. We're finally living big. Uh-huh. High on the hog, as they say.
That's right. We have a kitchen island.
We
could chop stuff. We used to have to, like, precariously balance the chopping board and that little rim between, like, the sink and the edge of the counter because we only had one square of counter space that was usually occupied by a toaster or whatever the drying rack was currently drying at that time.
Yeah, if we had dishes drying and I wanted to make a peanut butter sandwich, there literally was not enough room in the quote-unquote kitchen to do that. The kitchen was a hallway, which, you know, not to sit here and complain about the fact that we got to live in New York City for 3 years, but now that we have a little more space for pretty much around the same amount of money, it's like, oh, right, okay, this seems way more sane and healthy, and it's quieter. There's not construction constantly happening. I can't remember if we went over this last week, but I think we're just very, very happy. We're constantly looking at each other in this apartment being like, this is great.
Yeah, well, like, the tail end of our stay in New York was, like, the building right next to us got completely demolished. So there was so much noise all the time.
Mice. Remember we had mice for a bit?
We had mice.
Because they had to go somewhere.
We lived on an avenue, not a street, so the traffic was way more. It was way louder anyway. And then we had to contend with all this construction going on. Just, like, we lived across from the street from a bar, so there's always, like, random people just screaming at the top of their lungs.
Yes. We couldn't even record during the day. Mm-hmm. Like, as this recording right now that we're doing is, what is it, Saturday during the day?
It's Sunday.
Oh, it's Sunday today? Okay, it's Sunday during the day, which we could not do in New York because just constant jackhammering and construction and yelling.
That's
so
right.
This is
it's
just
Goldberg out there.
Yeah. It's just the lap of luxury right now. It's great. So Razor's sitting in his little we got room in the Pizzone for a little Razor bed, which I like.
It's quite comfy.
Yeah, so, you know.
Razor has been so much more chill, too.
He has, and we were thinking about it, because, like, a little dog like that, when there's constant noise and activity, and you can hear other dogs, and he sees all these people walking on the street below the window and stuff, it's probably a little more stressful for a little dog like that, and he was really just on edge all the time in New York, and, like, here he seems pretty cool about stuff.
Yeah. The only thing that's missing right now, and this really has nothing to do with Connecticut, but I just feel like a void because I don't have a video game that's been really consuming me and occupying much of my time.
You started Dragon Ball.
I got like up to like day three of Disco Elysium, which I was really into that for a while, and I'm not completely done with it, but I'm kind of getting burnt out on it because as that world grows, there's just so much to keep track of, and I'm really missing like any kind of actual gameplay mechanics instead of just reading. I mean, the writing obviously is amazing, but I want a game. You know what I mean? Like, I'm definitely going to go back to that, but I want a game. And I dabbled a little bit in Dragon Ball, what's it called?
Kakarot.
Dragon Ball Z Kakarot.
Dragon Ball Z Kakarot, yeah.
Yeah, and it's fucking atrocious.
That it's Metacritic looked all right.
78 isn't great.
No, it's not great. But I that was higher than I expected based on what I have been hearing from people who I trust about video games, including you.
Yeah, it's not great. It just there's like it feels like an really old RPG with like a new next generation sheen on it with the graphics. But like it does that thing where if you try to walk away like out of the area that it wants you to be in, it'll just be like, oh, Chi-Chi's really mad at me. Ah, Chi-Chi's really mad at me. Ah, Chi-Chi's really, like, the same thing every time.
I feel
and,
like...
And, like, you go, like, slightly away from Gohan, and Gohan just stops following you, and you have to, like, walk at a snail's pace for him to stay by you. It's just, like, annoying shit like that.
That sounds like a worse version of the stuff that bugged me about Red Dead 2. Where
well,
it's like, you're
Red
on a mission...
Dead, it would, like, change, like, the dialogue would change if you, like, decided to go off course. It would be different every time.
It would change the dialogue. Like, it's definitely... Red Dead 2 is an incredibly well-made game in a lot of ways, but, like... functionally the thing where it's like, oh, I'm on a mission with Dutch, I'm supposed to go this way, but then I saw a duck that I needed a little bit off the path, and then I go to get that duck, and Dutch is like, hey, we're going over here, mission failed.
Yeah, you know? I mean, that never bothered me so much in Red Dead, because I feel like when I was on a mission, I was on the mission, and there was as much time as you wanted between missions to do whatever the fuck you wanted.
Oh, there's
to.
Plenty of time and plenty of downtime in that game to do whatever you want.
I mean, that's the thing. I feel like your experience with that game was so affected by the fact that you had to like rush through it to complete it. I think if you were given time to just do it at your own pace, yep, like I was, you would appreciate it so much more, because it wasn't about just doing shit. It was about being in that world and experiencing, you know, just the walking around. Like, I had the best moment in that game, which I refer to often, was just when I was riding my horse and it was raining and I was going through the woods. Like, that isn't something I'm doing. I'm not in the middle of a mission. I'm not hunting something. I'm just riding the horse, and it was like, it literally made me cry.
In terms of like, yeah, crafting a world and everything, like, it really was great. And I have thought about that game a lot in the last few months, basically ever since Death Stranding turned out to be one of the biggest turds I've ever played. It made me appreciate certain things about Red Dead. Like, oh, that actually was a fully well-crafted, realized world with a bunch of stuff to do and character and heart and stuff. Not like just the steaming pile of garbage that Death Stranding was.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that Death Stranding happened. I mean, it is...
I don't even know if I appreciate it.
It is pretty ballsy for, like, a game with a huge budget, like, so much anticipation. It ended up being this art project, essentially.
Yeah, I respect, you know, in the same way that we talked about like Evangelion, how I kind of respected the way that like those last couple of episodes, 25 and 26, were kind of like, hey, fuck you guys, this is what I want to make. Mm-hmm. I do kind of always appreciate people that get to that point in their careers where they don't really have to worry about that, and they can just be like, I'm just making whatever weird bullshit I want, and if you don't like it, fuck you. And like, that's what it felt Kojima was doing here, so good on him. And it probably gets sold well from what I heard. Like, he's rich as hell. He gets to do whatever the hell he wants.
Story about that.
Yeah, I can't fault Hideo Kojima. I can just think the game sucks.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate that it happened. That being said, especially with video games, just because something hasn't been done yet doesn't mean it should be done. In fact, a lot of times it's not done for a reason. I mean, I don't know. I would not like if this was the catalyst for like a trajectory of mainstream games focusing more on atmosphere and statement, whatever stupid statement it wants to make, rather than actual
phone's
gameplay.
Bad.
Yeah. But that being said, I can't imagine any other developer taking such a huge fucking risk, because no one would be given the leeway that Kojima is given.
Yeah.
So I'm not too worried about that happening.
No. And you know what?
So that's why I can look back and be like, all right, I'm happy Death Stranding exists. I'm definitely not going to play that game.
It was an interesting anomaly. And like, yeah, I can see what you're saying. I don't enjoy any of the time I spent playing it. But like, yeah, as a weird anomaly that does not really happen and probably won't happen much in the future. Sure.
Yeah. Well, I think that it says a lot, too, about how, you know, these people are, someone can be an absolute genius like Kojima obviously is. But if they're not given anything to overcome any adversity, if they're just given free reign to do whatever they want, maybe it won't be as good. Maybe they need someone to challenge them, someone to restrict them in some ways. Because if you think about it, like in all your creative endeavors, the best stuff comes when you do have restrictions, when it's not like a free-for-all for you to do whatever the fuck you want.
Right.
When you're given some kind of, I don't know, you can call it guidance, you could call it rules or restrictions or whatever, someone to answer to.
Some checks on your own indulgence.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then there's also something we said, I think Norm Macdonald said something about how like there's this period in your life, like a confluence between peak creativity and like peak adversity where you're the most creative. So it could just be like, as you get older, you're just not going to make stuff that's as good.
You've talked about that with like new Tool and Metallica albums and stuff.
Yeah,
where it's like, man, they don't have that angst. They don't have that, like, they don't need to have that fire and passion anymore because they've made it a million times over.
Right.
And so it's just kind of safer and
Yeah. I mean, it's not always the case that just because you're, you know, 50-something, you're not going to make good shit. Like, that's definitely not the case.
Like, Bob Dylan made great stuff. I mean, recently, in the last, like, 10, 15 years, Bob Dylan has done some of his best work.
Yeah, yeah. What band recently was I listening to that I was like, oh, this is an older band, but it's really good. I forget. But, yeah, it's definitely not, like, a rule by any stretch. But, I mean, I think when, especially musicians, reach a certain level of success, and I guess this could be said for anything, it like what they're doing doesn't have that pressure. It doesn't have that like desperation.
Yeah, like you have to do your absolute best so you can like pay to live,
you know? Like, yeah. Fear Inoculum, the Tool album, was just such a fucking snooze
fest. So the new
one? Yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah, it was just them completely just riot, like, just doing the same formula they've always done.
Yeah.
You know, and it was disappointing. Like, I love Tool. I mean, Lateralis is one of my favorite albums ever, but this was just such a fucking, like, all right, you did not have to put this. There's no reason for this album to come out.
Other than it's an easy way for them to just make a lot more money.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, obviously, yeah. I think it's pretty obvious that's what it was.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, and it took fucking 10, 12 years to come out.
But, I mean, I'm sure your expectations were in check, right?
Oh, my expectations were very low. Because 10,000 Days was fine, but I don't think it was anywhere near the previous album. So I already didn't have high expectations.
I didn't hear you saying any kind of excitement about it prior to it coming out. It was just kind of like, well, I'm going to walk around and listen to this.
Yeah.
You know?
Plus, I feel like with Spotify and with music being like more accessible than ever in terms of you don't have to go to a store to buy it, you could just stream it for free. Tool has been exposed to so much more people, and I feel like Maynard has attained this weird, like, people have deified him in some ways.
Yes.
And which I think is super fucking lame, because he's just a guy that, you know, wrote interesting lyrics and, you know, vocal melodies or whatever, but, and now he's kind of seems to have owned that completely. he seems like a little bit of a douchebag. So my expectations were very low.
Remember when we were on a train one time in New York City a few months ago and you thought you saw Maynard just sitting on the subway?
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And then we looked again and that is not
that's
Maynard.
Not, yeah, that wasn't
super
him,
not Maynard.
Yeah. I haven't seen, like, had a ton of celebrity sightings when I was in New York. I saw
a handful.
I saw the guy who did Supersize Me.
Oh, Morgan Spurlock?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I saw Kyle Moffitt from SNL. Mm-hmm. He's the guy that plays the guy that just bought a boat. He was riding a bike. I saw TJ Miller, renowned douchebag.
Oh, yes.
Saw him walking around. I saw JB Smoove leaving your old office.
Oh, yeah. I used to work at the David Lynch Foundation, so there would be celebrities. Oh, yeah. I guess I saw a bunch of celebrities.
Oh, yeah. Tons
David
there
Lynch Foundation.
Through work, yeah. What was the Kendall Kardashian? You saw some really famous
Kendall
Instagram
Jenner.
Lady. Kendall Jenner.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. I have heard that name. I know she's famous for something.
Who the fuck knows? Yeah. I think she's a supermodel or something.
Oh, yeah. Plenty of Comedy Cellar nights seeing, you know, like the David Tells and Jeff Rosses of the world.
Judd Apatow.
That was a random one, yeah.
Yeah.
Although that's not really like encountering them on the street. That's like a place where you would expect to see drop-ins and
right.
stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? It's kind of fun. I know we haven't touched on the movie at all yet, but hey, this is our podcast, so we get to do whatever we want. And it turns out I don't have 90 podcasts I'm talking on a week anymore, so it's kind of nice to be able to like talk about video games and stuff like that. I'll do my quick video game check-in here. We've been playing Tekken 7.
Oh, yes.
It's good.
Fun. Yeah, I can't believe like I'm actually beating you a lot in it.
Well, I mean, I have not gone deep into a Tekken since like Tekken 3, and so I still remember the basics. Like, a lot of the basics are the same. Like, these two are throw, these two are throw. These two and these two are going to do different, like, cooler, more elaborate moves. I've had to learn, like, the rage thing, the RB. That's easy. You hit RB. And we always block each other for the most part.
Yes.
So that's been awesome. We're going through the treasure battles, trying to unlock everything.
Yeah. That's fun. That's really fun. I have to, like, I approach every fighting game like it's Soul Calibur.
Yeah.
Just because that's the one I've played the most.
Yep.
And it's, like, trying to get out of that mold. I think I'm getting the hang of it a little more.
I think we're well matched for each other.
Yeah. It's really fun. The characters are the roster is so diverse.
Yeah, and I've mentioned today while we were playing, it's like it does that perfect type of like very Japanese video game thing that is that I love, and it is treating so much of it deadly serious. Like, you know, the Tekken story is stuff like fathers throwing their sons into volcanoes and stuff. It's like the most serious stuff, but then you're also like, you know, a boxing velociraptor or unlocking like a cat skin for your fighting bear,
your giant,
you know,
panda. Yeah, and it takes it all the same level of serious.
Yes, it's not winking at the camera. It's not like, hey, aren't we silly? It's just silly as hell.
Guys, this is serious business.
It's the Metal Gear
thing.
You
need to choose what fancy golf hat you want to put on this giant wrestling panda.
Yeah, Tekken's really good, and this is
good.
The most I've liked Tekken in a long time.
I love, like, the opening animations before the fights. Like, there'll be these, like, really hot ladies with their boobs hanging out, and they'll just be, like, licking their lips.
Yes.
And then be some, like, Satan devil djinn guy that's like, oh, I'm going to feast on your soul or
shooting
some shit.
Lasers out of his forehead. And
so
like,
then
some girl with a bicycle being like, hey, I'm here to fight. And then Paul, I love Paul's entrance where he apparently just builds a brick wall just to make a big punch through it.
He gets there early. He gets to Infinite Azure early, so he can stack up that brick wall just to make it come crashing down.
I really appreciate all of it.
He's making a statement. He puts a lot of effort, obviously, into his hair,
his whole thing. His whole look, he's got a cohesive look going on
he's
there.
He's the Bass of the Tekken roster.
Yes, definitely. It's been really fun playing that. I want to keep playing that with you.
It's a good time. We've been playing that on the new TV.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. I was thinking of trying Prey. I played the original Prey.
Prey's all right. Prey. Some people love it. I didn't finish it. I know my Hardy loves it.
Well, I come, like, when I do research for work stuff, like, I've read about that game doing some new and interesting things.
It does.
I feel like I should check it out.
Yeah, it's got, like, an openness to it that a lot of, like, FPS type stuff doesn't have. Mm-hmm. It's definitely not just, like, an action FPS type thing. It's got some, like, Metroidvania elements, some exploration. Like, it does some
cool
stuff.
That sounds interesting to me. That sounds like something I should play. Yeah. But then Baba's You also I want to try to get back into.
Oh, that's such a beast.
Yeah. Well, it starts off fun, and it inches, like, you know, little by little, it gets more difficult, and then it's just, like, you're staring at this thing. It's like, what the fuck do I have to do?
And you just feel like an idiot. You either feel like an idiot or the smartest person on the planet with
yeah.
that game.
But it kind of, I don't know, it got to a point where it builds on the previous round in a smart way and it becomes naturally more difficult. But then I feel like it gets to a part where it kind of deviates from that set way of thinking altogether. And then it just introduces, like, an entirely new way of thinking. And it's like, when you're going from one to another, you expect it to continue on a certain trajectory, and then it just completely changes its own logic, and you're kind of just there guessing what it is.
Yeah, it'll, like, introduce something that totally changes, like, the little, like, robot guys that go back and forth. It's like, oh, wait, now I got to think about this? Like, it's not just moving words
it's
around
now. It's
not,
like, a natural progression, which I feel like it makes sense why I know a lot of people hit a wall with that game and stop playing, even though they really enjoyed the first part, which we had so much fun
doing. Oh, yeah.
Until
it's a great game.
We hit that wall, yeah, but I would maybe on a quiet night when I'm looking for something to do. Westerotto is another one I want to check out. These are all older games, obviously, but
I feel like we're in a weird lull post-holidays right now, and everything got delayed. We still have Animal Crossing and Doom coming
up. I'm extremely excited about Animal Crossing. It'll be my first foray into that.
It's just
and
the best.
Doom Infinite.
Doom Eternal.
Eternal.
Yeah, which I've heard. Mahardy was just telling me it's looking real good. From what I've heard. Other than that, I've just been kind of Call of Duty-ing until more games come out. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'm going to play Dragon Ball.
I don't recommend it.
Yeah, it's just everything I've read, and I've talked to some of the old game industry folks that I know, and I've heard nothing that makes me want to play that.
Plus,
really.
It's the same story. It's this Dragon Ball Z story. It's like that whole exact same story. It's not like you're getting a new story with these guys.
So. Which is why I hate the thing where it's like, if I'm doing a fight and I know Goku is going to lose this fight, it's like, oh great, I'm going to bring this guy's health bar all the way down only to see a cutscene where it's like Goku dies for the 400th time. I think I'll stay away from that.
At least the matches won't be fucking 7 hours long.
Yeah.
They are
like
the show.
All the different episodes, like you got to charge for like hours. Yeah. Well, I hope you're enjoying our new video game and moving to Connecticut podcast. So, actually, it's honestly really nice to just like, hey, this is just our podcast, so we can just talk about whatever the hell we want.
We can.
Hey, but, you know, if the listeners would like to hear this type of stuff and they like it, we can. This was not a planned thing by any means, but I hope you enjoy hearing us kind of ramble here in the Pizone.
Mm-hmm.
And, but we also, we will still talk about the things that on the podcast.
Hell or High Water?
Yes, on the Netflix we just watched. It was the first film we watched on our new TV.
And it was spectacular.
Yeah, I love this movie.
Yeah, it was great.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This was, okay, so I didn't know anything about this going in.
All I knew was that it was a Western. I thought it was going to be an old-timey Western.
Me too.
And I was very pleased when I saw it was more contemporary.
Yeah, I expected it to be like a 310 to Yuma type thing where it's, you know, it's set a long time ago in the West. But everybody I've talked to about this said like, oh, I bet you would like this movie a lot. And all I knew was that it was a Western. And then we start seeing like cars and cell phones right away. And it's like, whoa, wait. Okay, but it's set in West Texas. So it very much has that Western feel. Mm-hmm. And also the core story of this movie, very little of it couldn't have been done and set in the 1800s. You know, it's robbing banks. It's lawmen versus outlaws.
I mean, that is what happens in the movie, but I feel like most of the movie is character development. It's not really the bank robbing and stuff like that. It's just about these characters.
Yeah, and I really do think you could take most of like the characters and events of this movie, and if it was set in like the 1800s, it would transfer fine, which it's so cool that it's set in modern settings, but feels like kind of a timeless story, you know, of just outlaws. And like it does the thing where it's like the antagonist, the outlaws, outlaws here, the brothers, the Howard brothers, mm-hmm. Toby and Tanner, played by Chris Pine and Ben Foster, they are not just straight-up monsters.
No.
You know, there's no straight-up monsters.
They're kind of anti-heroes. I mean, you're almost rooting for them, and the movie goes out of its way to make the Banks out to be, like, kind of a villain. Like,
that's
it's kind of like a Robin Hood type of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, the Texas Midlands Bank, who, right. like, the core structure here is that, like, basically, they have this old land, the Howard family. The mom died. Turns out there's oil on it, they found out. But, like, when the mom died, like, all the reverse mortgage stuff or whatever was basically passed down mm-hmm. to Toby. And so they've got a few days to pay off this reverse mortgage, or the bank basically gets to grab all the land and the oil, which the bank desperately wants.
Right.
And so they decide to go on, like, a bank robbing spree to raise the money to own the thing outright. Mm-hmm. Toby's divorced, Chris Pine is, and so he just wants his kids to not grow up in poverty like he did.
Right. And so, yeah, that's why they're scrambling to get this money, even though on the land, obviously the land is worth a bazillion dollars because
yeah.
there's oil on it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's long-term money. That's not the instant money that they need now.
Yeah, and they were, like, specifically targeting branches of the Texas Midlands
mm-hmm.
Bank. So,
mm-hmm.
like, just a cool, simple story.
Right.
And, like, we talk a lot about, like, we love Blade Runner.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a weird comparison to make here, but, like, the way Blade Runner was just, like, tonally, it's just the whole time I was watching this movie, I felt like I was just in that world
mm-hmm.
and really, really loving everything that was going on. Like, musically, Nick Cave, I guess, did a lot of work on the soundtrack, like, putting it together, which I loved the soundtrack, a lot of, like, Outlaw Country and Townes Van Zandt, Waylon type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really fit the tone of the movie. But it was almost like The Hitcher, too, where it's, like, it's a very simple story, just told very well with a really cool atmosphere, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, the acting, I feel like this was the strength of the movie was in the acting.
Oh, Jeff Bridges is
Jeff Bridges,
excellent.
Chris Pine. I mean, like,
mm-hmm.
I obviously Chris Pine is a big celebrity, you know, fantasy celebrity guy. But I only think I saw him in the first Star Trek movie, and that, like, in my recollection, like, I looked over his filmography, and I feel like that's all I've really seen him in.
Yeah.
Which, the first Star Trek movie, I remember I was going to go to class, it was in college, and then I was like, I don't feel like going to class tonight, and I went to see the Star Trek movie instead.
Yeah.
And it was, like, last minute, so I got, like, one of the last tickets, and it was the first time I'd ever sat in the very front row of a theater, and it was fucking horrible.
Oh, the experience or the movie?
The experience was terrible.
Okay.
Like, I couldn't see anything.
Yeah, first row,
you have
no
to, like,
good.
Move your head back and forth.
I used to know people that would, like, even in a totally empty theater, they would want to go directly up front. It's like, are you nuts?
That,
like,
is
that's the
that
worst.
That is so strange. That's a weird choice. They shouldn't even be there.
Yeah, take them out.
Yeah, the people. Take them out. Kill them.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I think we're taking it a bit far here.
Yeah, but yeah, so I only saw him in that, and he was fucking amazing in this movie.
He is. I actually just pulled up his IMDb. I was trying to think if I've seen him in anything
mm-hmm.
beyond. I saw the first two Star Treks, which I really like that first one a lot,
mm-hmm.
even though I'm not a Star Trek guy. I thought that first one was great. It looks like he's in the Wonder Woman movies. I've not seen those. I guess he was in, like, three Star Treks here. Yeah, I don't think I've really seen him in much of anything here. He was Peter Parker in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, the older, like, divorced one.
Oh, okay.
I didn't realize that was his voice, but yeah, I haven't seen a lot of him. But he played this role extremely well, and he's, like, the more kind of level-headed of
right.
the two brothers. Because Tanner, Ben Howard does such a, or sorry, Ben Foster, Tanner Howard.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Howard was my old boss at CBS. Ben Foster does a great job of kind of playing that wild card, like,
mm-hmm.
like, he's not just doing this to raise the money for the farm. He is doing this because he is getting some sort of thrill out of,
right.
like,
he's
robbing,
like,
the
a
banks.
Career criminal. He's recently out of prison. But he seems to really, really care about his brother. Like,
yes.
there's obviously a strong bond there, and he ultimately sacrifices himself for his brother. But he's, like, even though he's kind of a wild card, as you say, and reckless, more reckless than Todd.
Toby. Todd Howard. Mixing up a lot of Howards here. Yes, Todd Howard did a great job. What an interesting turn for his career.
He is still, like, so competent in everything he does. Like, he's
mm-hmm.
an amazing sharpshooter, and, like, he's really good at poker. Like, he's not just shitty like Martin Lawrence. Like, he's really good at what he does.
Yeah, and I really liked the little moments they did where it was just like, oh, they'd had a couple beers and they had, like, a fun little chat, and then they were, like, just kind of, like, weirdly wrestling
mm-hmm.
at night that one time. Like, they did stuff like that really well.
That's the brotherly relationship that you missed out on not having any brothers.
Yeah.
My two older brothers would just wrestle all the time. That's what they did.
Oh, yeah.
They're just constantly wrestling. That's what guys do.
See, I had four sisters.
You know, being a guy.
Just dude stuff. Yeah. I had sisters, and so we just wound up pranking each other all the time.
Okay.
It wasn't like we weren't wrestling.
Yeah, my brothers would never wrestle. They were just playing instruments all the time. They wouldn't wrestle at all and playing video games. My brother, Danny, used to prank me by putting those firecrackers. I was always in mortal fear of this happening. You know those firecrackers, you put them on the door, and then when you open the door...
Yeah, the little paper things you can throw down. Yeah.
My God. He would put them on my door all the time. So every time I would open my door, and it would be like a gunshot, and it would freak me out. And I was so scared that it was going to happen all the time.
And you get very jumpy sometimes when you're worried something. Like, if I even, like, bring up the idea of tickling, mm-hmm. you will, like, wince physically.
It wasn't like it was just something he would prank me with occasionally. Like, I lived in fear. It was like, he was like a terrorist in the house.
These tiny little paper things.
Yeah, it was horrible.
One thing I really, really liked here was that it is not a, you know, rootin' tootin' shoot 'em up Western.
Right.
It is, violence happens, mm-hmm. but it's like Drive, mm-hmm. where it's like, when it happens, it is impactful
right.
and brutal at
yes,
times.
Yes, absolutely. Like, yeah, they're not fast and loose with the like lives lost in this.
It's not John Wick.
But like, so these guys, they're going on a bank robbing spree, and the first two bank robberies that happen kind of go off without a hitch for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
No one dies. And so I'm thinking to myself, like, okay, these guys, they don't actually want to hurt anyone. They just want to give a middle finger to the bank, right?
Yeah.
But then the third bank robbery where they walk in and there's just a ton of people in the bank because it's a much bigger bank than they previously hit.
And that's a great moment.
It's great. And things just start going wrong and two people end up dying. Ben Foster's character kills two people and a security officer and then some random dude. And that was like, holy shit.
I initially thought that it was Toby, Chris Pine, that killed this civilian. And so I remember thinking like, oh man, like he does not seem like the type that would kill someone. Mm-hmm. And then later he's like in the back of the pickup truck. And he's like, oh my God, people were dying. Like mm-hmm. I thought he killed the person. Then mm-hmm. I realized later that like, oh, okay, it was actually Tanner that killed
right.
both. And he didn't seem to hate it. It didn't seem to bother him at all. Like
right.
when they were leaving, he's just like, hey, I don't know. We're robbing banks. What do you expect? Stuff's going to happen, you know?
Right, right.
Like he doesn't seem to have any kind of weighing on his conscience.
No. Yeah. He obviously cares about his brother, but he doesn't seem to care too much about other people at all.
No. He seems to almost kind of have a death wish, too.
Right.
Like, he's just very reckless with everything he mm-hmm. does. Also, real ballsy to be doing a string of bank robberies in Texas, because especially in this big bank, it's just like, oh, everyone's got a gun. And
yeah.
they're all, it's not just like, oh, the cops are going to come. We need to get out of here. It's like every single person in this bank is going to be shooting at you when you leave, which happens like at every bank they go to.
Right.
At least one person's like shooting at
right.
them. I loved that moment where it's like, they're pretty low stakes bank robberies up to that point where it's like, hey, it's just like one teller, not really mm-hmm. anybody, or like right when the bank is opening and we're just going to take the teller or whatever,
right.
we're going to hit the owner or whatever. But this one, there's like 20 people and you get that shot of Chris Pine through his mask, just being like, oh mm-hmm. no,
yeah.
we are. And he had expressed, he's like, this is too big, mm-hmm. like before they go in. And then it's just like, oh, this is exactly what I was worried about.
Right. Yeah.
That escalation was awesome. Like there's a slow burn to this movie.
Uh-huh.
And then by the end, it's just like things are like, oh, things are going real bad here.
Right,
you know?
Yeah. And they get all this money from the banks and then they launder it by going to the casino.
Mm-hmm.
So like when I first saw that, I was like, oh, okay, these guys are obviously like, you know, reckless with the money. They're just going to gamble away. But then it's like, oh no, they're just laundering it.
Yeah.
It makes perfect sense.
Yeah, then they can bring a check into the bank and be like, yeah, we got lucky at the casino. What do you want? You
Although
know?
I would think the casino would be like, I don't know. I feel like there'd be red flags if someone just exchanges a bunch of their, like, a ton of money for chips and then just sits at the bar and doesn't use the chips and then just goes back for the money.
Plays, like, one hand of $5 blackjack and is like, all right, cash out. I'm good to go.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But, oh, that reminds me. One of my favorite scenes in the movie was when Ben Foster is playing poker. And he has that standoff with
The Comanche guy.
Yeah,
that
was
yeah.
awesome. That scene, like, that was the scene where I was like, okay, he's not just like some reckless idiot. Like he is in himself like very intimidating.
Right,
and
right.
Scary.
Seems yeah, genuinely scary.
Yeah.
Speaking of scary, there's the part where they're at the gas station and that punk kid is like trying to like, hey man, check it out. You scared of me, pussy? And
blasting like grindcore music.
Yeah, and then Chris Pine just comes out and just beats the fuck out of him.
That was awesome.
That was one of the first parts too when I talk about like violence like happening suddenly
mm-hmm.
and like he doesn't kill the kid or anything, but it's like brutal. It's like
mm-hmm.
he's like slamming him into the car door and all that stuff
mm-hmm.
and like I thought that scene was great.
It was really good. I figured at some point there would be some kind of like romantic part of this movie, and I was really happy that there wasn't. I feel like that's so cliche. That would have been so forced. Like
yeah.
even Chris Pine's relationship with his wife is like, it's not like they reconcile at the end. Like,
oh, no.
His efforts aren't to win back his wife. It's just to like help his kids.
Yeah, it's genuine. And it seems like it's like a realistic divorced dynamic where it's just like, eh, it's cold, but like, you know, she seems like kind of, no, you're helping us out. You know,
right.
It's everything just feels very believable. In this
it does.
Movie.
And like there was that flirtatious moment between the waitress and Chris Pine.
Right.
And it was like, all right, is something going to happen here? But ultimately, just like you learn at the end, like towards the end of the movie, that the locals from the diner didn't want to give away their identities. Like, so the locals are even on the robber's side because they want to, you know, say fuck you to the banks as well.
Right. Yeah. Because the banks basically like ruined the town. And,
right.
Like, we're giving out all these mortgages and stuff that people couldn't pay back. And yeah. And the one woman from Eastbound and Down that, you know, she wants to keep her tips and everything. Mm-hmm. So she's not really giving anything up. And then at the end, the bank isn't even like cooperating with the investigation because they want to keep the trust.
Right.
That happens later on. But yeah, like I mentioned the escalation earlier. And boy, by the end, it's like, I think starting with that big bank robbery, that's where everything from that point on is so tense.
Yeah.
From like, you have that part where he has to go through the police checkpoint. And like, so Chris Pine gets shot during that robbery. And so he like has to tape it up with like electrical tape and go through this like checkpoint. And it's just really tense where it's for a long time they're looking at his ID and stuff. And he's just sitting there bleeding and having to like not act like he's hurting. I thought that part was incredible. And then there's the part where Tanner gets out with just that machine gun.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just walking because all the locals are chasing him in their trucks after the bank robbery.
And I thought like, oh, well, they're fucked at this point.
Oh, the brothers?
Yeah.
Oh,
and then he stops and takes out that fucking machine gun and just annihilates them and they all drive away.
He's not like hiding at all. He's just like walking like a Terminator towards like six pickup trucks of armed guys. And they're just like, gee, and they actually do leave at some point.
Yeah.
That was the point where I was like, okay, he's just got a death wish. You know, he's creating this distraction so like Chris Pine can get away
with the money. But he knows what he's doing and he's really good at everything he tries to do.
Yeah. Oh,
like the genius plan too, like immediately after that when they drive away and then you see like what that extra car was for and they just, Chris Pine just gets in that other car.
Oh,
the one that isn't shot up.
Yep.
And then his brother goes and like, you know, he's just going to sacrifice himself to save his brother.
Yeah. Huge distraction with like the bomb thing where he just kind of pours the gas and like
awesome.
That rolls down the hill and blows up. And then that is probably the most brutal part of the movie is, so Jeff Bridges, we haven't really talked about him much, but basically there are these two cops that are on the trail of the bank robberies. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of character stuff. Like plot wise, they're just kind of like trying to figure out, they're interviewing people, they're trying to figure out where the robbers
Jeff Bridges is like a seasoned sheriff. Is he a sheriff, detective, kind of?
Something like that, verge of retirement.
Yeah, right about to retire. And he's, you could tell he's extremely competent at what he does. Like everything that he's assuming and deducing is, we know as the viewer, is correct. And he's just very like, I don't know, just very wise in that like Texan way.
It's peak like grizzled Jeff Bridges.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like you can like half. It sounds like he's got marbles in his mouth the whole time.
Yeah.
Like just this drawl. Like
totally.
But he's just such a fun guy to watch act, and like especially when he's really chewing into a character like he does here. But throughout these scenes with Jeff Bridges, you meet his partner Alberto, who they have a really fun kind of dynamic back and forth. They kind of give each other shit a lot and everything. But like you really like his partner quite a bit.
Yeah, the only time I didn't like him was when Jeff Bridges came into his hotel room with a six pack, and you could tell he probably wanted to share the six pack with him, but then he just wanted to go to sleep.
Oh yeah, and then he wanted to watch like Jesus programming or whatever.
So stupid.
Yeah. But yeah, that incredibly brutal part, I would say probably the most brutal part of the movie, is when Tanner is doing his big distraction and he like gets up on a hill with this sniper rifle basically,
and he's just picking off the officers.
Yeah, and again, he just seems like he's just kind of a sociopath at certain points in this movie. But yeah, he shoots Alberto just like directly in the head, and it's just kind of brutal. Like you see Jeff Bridges look down, and it, like there's like brain matter in like his cowboy hat, basically.
I mean, it comes out of nowhere too. It's not
like
the scene was being built up, and you knew something bad was going to happen. Like it literally came out of nowhere. Jeff Bridges was talking to him and made some joke, and then he looked down and he's dead.
Every scene of violence in this movie feels earned and important and impactful.
Right.
It's rare that a movie can pull that off so well. And in this one, just everything felt like it mattered.
Yeah,
know?
I feel like with a lot of movies at a certain point, the bodies don't really matter at all.
Right.
It's just like you're unfazed by it completely. But then this one was really well done. It made it, like you say, it made it count.
Yeah. I was 100% invested in every moment of this movie. Mm-hmm. I thought from the very beginning to the very end. And speaking of the end, I thought the end was great. So basically, Chris Pine, like the brother does die during the standoff. Jeff Bridges kills him.
Shoots him in the head.
Shoots him right in the head, and he kind of like just dies sitting up. And so Chris Pine is able to pay everything off. Like the bank is clearly trying to like delay. I like the part where Chris Pine's like, I got nowhere to be. Mm-hmm. I'm going to watch you do this. Like, mm-hmm. send the fax, do this thing, you know?
Right.
And the bank's like, okay, all right, we got you. And then Jeff Bridges, just knowing that Toby was involved and like masterminded a lot of this stuff, but like technically they didn't really have anything to pin on him, so right. he couldn't really go to jail.
Yeah, and the locals weren't giving him up or anything.
No, and the cops, like a lot of the police, were just like, he's got this oil field, like why the hell would he do this?
Right.
And so Jeff Bridges just goes, and they have this really kind of interesting, tense conversation on the porch of the ranch, just being like, why did you do this? You have money, mm-hmm. and you didn't enjoy doing it the way your brother did. And, like, they're both kind of holding their guns, and it's just, like, you wonder if it's going to be this, like, shootout thing at the
right.
end. But then the family just kind of shows up, and it's just Jeff Bridges kind of leaving, and Chris Pine being like, hey, if you ever want to come back and we finish this conversation, uh-huh. we can do that. And then they just leave. And, I loved that ending where it was just this, like, these two guys that both knew the score
right.
and knew what happened, but, like, it doesn't lead to, like, a cliche shootout or
exactly.
something. It's just like, okay, let's go our separate ways.
Right.
We both know what the other one's, you know, what the deal is here.
Yeah, that was a good way to end it.
What a good movie.
It was awesome.
I just really, really, really loved everything about it.
It was fun. I was completely engrossed the whole time.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like it was too long either. How long was that?
It was like an hour 47, something
yeah,
like that.
It wasn't a super long movie then.
It never drags either. Like it's a slow burn, but in the best of ways,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Totally.
So you know, we watched like 100-ish almost things for this podcast now. It's definitely top 10 for me
it
as
was
far
awesome.
As stuff we've watched. So, yeah, if you want to check it out, it's been thoroughly spoiled for you if you haven't seen it yet. But, hey, if you want to check it out, it's on Netflix, Hell or High Water. Excellent stuff.
Yeah, it was great. Definitely
yeah.
watch it.
And we just want to give a big old thank you to everyone out there that listens to our podcast or supports us on the old Patreon there. That's patreon.com/paintingthestream. Help us keep the lights on in the pizzone here. So we have one simple $5 tier. And if you would like to help us out at that, you will get an ad-free version of this podcast each and every week. And on top of that, you will get your own custom Bonku. Correct?
That's right.
That'll be sent to you right there on the Patreon, but also we will read one per episode. So stay tuned and you will definitely hear your Bonku read by one Bonk herself. Bonk, do we have one this week?
We do indeed, Daniel.
Let's hear it.
This Bonku is for a fella named Andrew. Andrew, Andy, Drew,
I think that's it.
That's
I don't
it.
Think there's a lot to play with
okay,
there.
Well, Andrew, he chooses to be called Andrew, so I will respect that. Andrew, I wrote this Bonku for you, like I said I would, and I hope you enjoy it. Andrew could not see the vibrant life that once gleamed from her cold, pale corpse.
Jesus. What's the story behind that one?
So that's up to you to figure
Who's
out.
Who's dead?
Who isn't?
Was Andrew involved?
Maybe.
Can we accept Patreon money from a murderer? Well, I guess we don't know. It's a mystery.
Well, I am the one that attributes these stories to the patron. So
that's true.
Sometimes you end up being a hero. Sometimes you end up being a murderer. Sometimes you're just a guy trying to make some bread or whatever, bake some bread.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just whatever I feel at that time. So Andrew, I'm sorry if this is disappointing to you, but you are involved in some kind of grisly scheme.
We're not, we have not contacted the authorities. We don't actually believe you've murdered anyone that we know of.
I know for a fact that, well, I can't really say that, but
right, well, Andrew,
as far as this person is concerned, the person that exists in the Bonku,
okay.
that is completely fabricated.
In the canon.
Okay. I can't say unequivocally that Andrew, the person who is our patron, has
yes.
not killed anyone.
But the canonical Bonku Andrew.
I feel like there's a good chance he hasn't because it's pretty rare that people kill people.
Oh, a small percentage, yeah.
Yeah. There's a good chance he hasn't, but listen, if you did, I know, and I'm on to you.
Oh boy, this Bonku's got
Can you
scary.
Imagine if he really did kill someone secretly, though, and he's hearing this? And
he's just like on the elliptical listening to this, and he's like, oh no.
Like, he's always trying to just like not think about the horrible thing that he did, and then just the person on the podcast is like, I know what you did.
The last way you would expect to be exposed.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thankfully, it's the most inconsequential way.
It's true. Thank you, Andrew, very much.
I don't think law enforcement listens to this podcast.
No, none of this is legally binding by any means. So for those of you out there listening, you can follow us at Pan the Stream on Twitter. If you want to find out what we are watching the next week, and you can watch along with us. You can email us at panningthestream@gmail.com. Comments, suggestions, feedback, all that stuff. If you enjoy the podcast, go over to that Apple Podcast and give us the old 5-star review and let the folks know what you think of it. But we appreciate each and every one of you that listens to Painting the Stream, all of our patrons, all of our listeners, and Bonk, you.
Oh, I appreciate you very much.
Yes, we could not do this without each other.
I appreciate that I can see your tiny little nipples through your pajama shirt.
Well, goodness gracious, this is, I thought the pizone was a relaxed area. I didn't think, I don't see any cameras in here.
I only noticed because you keep like pulling it out and then letting it go.
I do?
Yeah, you keep doing that.
I do?
Yeah, you keep doing
it. I've never noticed that I've done that in my life.
I know, you do it often.
I'm glad we don't have a video podcast, so. Thanks to everyone for listening. Bonk, thank you so much for joining me each and every week.
Of course.
And we'll be back next week with more Painting the Stream.
Bye-bye.
Bye.